Yep.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the June 4th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules, the committee that obviously is one place to go if you have no place else to go, and a wonderful place to be. So good morning, everybody.
They're almost the only game in town.
That makes it the best.
So, members, we have quite a few resolutions and memorials, and we're going to be joined by various legislators on split second timing for that. But we're going to start by opening a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 771. And Lori, could you tell us about this bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 771 allows a judge member of public employee's retirement system to designate more than one beneficiary to receive retirement benefits after the judge's death. It declares an emergency. It's effective on passage. There is no revenue impact on the Dash 2, which is the amendment, requested amendment, and that simply changes person, the singular, to persons, the plural. And then we just received, thanks to legislative fiscal as well, a no fiscal impact statement. All of those documents should be attached to your SMS.
Great. Thanks, Lori. And I see that Senator Arne Roblin is with us. And I believe you have a friend that's going to be joining us on the telephone.
Yes, Senator Barron. I'm a senator.
Judge.
Hi, is this Judge Richard Barron?
Yes, it is.
Good morning, Judge Barron. This is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee, and I have just opened a hearing on Senate Bill 771. Our capable committee administrator just explained what the bill does, and now we're going to hear from Senator Arne Roblin, and then we'll hear from you.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. As you know, I am, for the record, Senator Arne Roblin from House District 5, Senate District 5, which goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay. This is a bill that was important to me because I had a dear friend, and you're going to hear from him here shortly, who had a life-changing event about the same time I had a life-changing event, as with his wife and me with my son. And we've been friends. He was the original school district's 9's attorney when I was first in Coos Bay schools. And I came to rely on him a lot when it came to understanding the school laws. And then he went off fairly shortly after that to become a judge, a circuit judge. And it is, in my opinion, and I think the opinion of many, one of the best circuit judges we have in Oregon. Because of looking at the PERS statutes and understanding that there are some differences between the judicial part and the regular PERS, they are separate kind of entities. And when things are allowed in one and not in others, and we work with PERS, so the Dash 2s that you have in front of you really specify what we're asking to change here, and that is that when you select your PERS right now, they can only put down in, as a judge, one beneficiary. And what this bill does simply is it allows more than one persons. And that says that I can make a decision when I'm retiring as to who will be the beneficiary of my estate, including the PERS portions, depending on what option I take. And when this came about as a problem for Judge Barron when his wife passed away, he has two sons, and he would love to make that work for his family in the future, and I think appropriately so when you consider the time and effort and the work that he's done in our stead. And, you know, I always like to remind people that we do have three branches of government. We forget that sometimes in the House, that and treat our judicial branch, I think, in some ways more like they're an executive branch portion as opposed to the separate branch they are. But this, again, shows, you know, we have a separate PERS thing for the judiciary because they are another branch of government, and I think this is only right that we make these changes, and would answer any questions that people have, and we'll look forward to hearing from Judge Barron.
Great. Well, thank you for bringing this bill to us. And Judge Barron, if you'd like to go ahead and just start by saying your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbloom and committee members. My name is Richard L. Barron. I've been a circuit judge for the 15th Judicial District since 1980. I want to thank Senator Roblin for sponsoring the bill and for his kind remarks. I appreciate you very much allowing me to testify by phone. I will be very brief. I know that you are very busy. My wife died in January 2012 after a long illness. We had been married for 45 years. As a result of her death, it was necessary for me to change beneficiaries on different accounts and policies, including my Judge PERS account. When I received the form from our personnel department to make the change, I found out that as a judge, I was only allowed to name one beneficiary, unlike persons in other PERS accounts who can name more than one beneficiary. My wife and I had two sons, and I would like to be able to name both of those as beneficiaries on my Judge PERS account as I can with other accounts and policies. That is my brief statement, and thank you for allowing me to testify, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule. We're certainly very sorry about the loss of your wife, and hopefully we can rectify what seems like a kind of strange anomaly in the law. So, members, did we have any questions for Senator Roplin or the judge? Okay, it looks like you have answered all of our questions. So
thank you very much. Thanks. Great to hear your voice, Rick.
Thank you. Bye, Ernie.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and members, I think that completes our testimony. We are in a work session.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 771.
Thank you. Senator Starr has moved the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 771. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Amendment is adopted. Senator Starr?
I move the bill as amended by the dash 2s to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 771 as amended by the dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. Senator Roblin, would you like to carry this on the floor? Great. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 771. Great. Thank you. And
we'll watch you on TV.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, and next we'll open a public hearing and work session on House Joint Memorial 17. Lori, would you like to tell us what this is?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Joint Memorial 17 urges Congress to direct the Pentagon to reopen and review Leonard DeWitt's nomination for the Medal of Honor for heroic actions during World War II. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and the House moved it off the floor with a 59-aye vote, one excused.
Thank you, Lori. And good morning, Representative Widener. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair Senator Rosenbaum and distinguished members of the Senate Committee on Rules, I appreciate your time and attention today in hearing HJM 17. My name is State Rep. Jim Widener from House District 24, representing both Yamhill and Washington County. I had the chance to meet with Lieutenant Colonel retired Leonard DeWitt on February 12th of this year in the Governor's Office for the Oregon World War II Memorial Honor Day. As an honorary board member, he spoke at this event and mentioned that he lives in McMinnville. After meeting him and his wife, we began talking about how Leonard DeWitt was nominated for the Medal of Honor for his actions in defending the U.S. position in Papua New Guinea against a massive entrenched Japanese fortification where they were holding a hill. During this encounter, Leonard DeWitt took personal initiative, single-handedly attacking the Japanese troops before they could sweep his company off the ridge that they had held. He engaged in brutal hand-to-hand combat to protect his fellow soldiers and maintain the American position. Due to these heroic actions, the commanding general of the 6th Army approved nomination of Leonard DeWitt for the Medal of Honor, stating, "Sergeant DeWitt's conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity above and beyond the call of duty are worthy of the highest recognition." Unfortunately, for reasons not fully understood, this request for Leonard DeWitt's Medal of Honor nomination languished on the desk of General Douglas MacArthur. Leonard DeWitt did, however, receive the Distinguished Service Cross, the United States Army's second highest honor. You may wonder why he and his family are seeking the Medal of Honor after all these years. But Leonard DeWitt wants to honor all Oregonians who have served under the 41st Infantry Sunset Division by giving the Distinguished Award to the museum in their honor. His continued thoughts of honoring all of those servicemen who fought alongside him has propelled him to action today. He is inspired by the current Oregon veterans who have served their country under the same division. Society needs heroes, and his narrative encompasses the best of American ingenuity and coolness under pressure. His story of success against devastating odds can inspire all of us and invoke a collective memory of national sacrifice and honor that can be passed down through the generations for future Oregonians. Remember, his legacy encompasses continued service to his country, serving in both Korea and Vietnam as well, taking with him even briefly with his casual demeanor, talking with him even briefly with his casual demeanor imparts a confidence to face any obstacle. I can think of few more that deserve this type of attention. We were honored, humbled, and excited to work for such a worthy cause and recipient. HJM 17 urges Congress to direct the Pentagon to reopen and review Leonard DeWitt's nomination for Medal of Honor for heroic action during World War II. Since we are fortunate enough to have Leonard DeWitt here with us today, I will allow you to hear from him to recount his heroic actions.
Thank you very much, Representative. And Mr. DeWitt, it's an honor to have you here, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Madam Chair, Senator, well, whatever comes of this,
Name. For the record, state your name.
Oh, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Leonard C. DeWitt. Yes, I'm retired. Did it? Okay. I say whatever comes of this effort we've embarked on with Jim Widener, I say that probably one of the greatest, if not maybe the best honor I've received so far is to appear here and talk before you people. So as far as my actions in New Guinea, I'll quickly let you in on a little bit of why we were there and what we were doing. We had hit the Japanese Imperial Forces back in New Guinea and driven them up about 200 miles to this great naval base that they had established, which they certainly did not want to lose. And we had our company I have, 162nd Infantry Regiment of the 41st Division, had obtained a small outpost, if you want to call it. We established a perimeter of about 60 of the remaining people of our 180-man company, and it was a marvelous military objective. We could, from its elevation, we could see out over all of this huge emplacement that the Japanese had established. We had been trying to break into that emplacement for about close to a month with our regiment. We'd started trying to find the weak points, and they were hard to find. The Japs had done a very good job over a long time of establishing this thing as a very fortified, easy to defend position. But with our location, we set up an artillery observation post where we could look out over this entire Japanese area and direct artillery fire on it, which was marvelous for the military. It was priceless. And the Japanese, at first, when we obtained this strong point, tried to drive us off. They hit us pretty hard, and they managed to come in where they shouldn't have, right down the ridge line from their outfit to ours. Now, the sides of the thing that we were on, the perimeter, were very steep, so naturally they came down the easy ridge, and we managed to beat them off. Then we knew sooner or later they'd try to come around to the flanks and get in there, and because they had to man their positions, they couldn't afford to waste too many people trying to take ours, even though ours was very devastating to their position. So they did come one night. And as a sergeant, I was a communication sergeant. I could drift around the unit any place I wanted. And I heard a commotion up to the left row forward area of the perimeter. And I went up there to see what the commotion was, and there was a man, Japanese officer probably, very loud, commanding voice down below me in this flatter area below our sides of our perimeter, was shouting orders to these people or his outfit. And I could, from a noise I could hear of them coming up the sides, I assumed that a pretty big outfit, maybe 25, 30 people, probably a good sized platoon. And unfortunately, just as I arrived at where this was taking place, our four guys were moving out. And I asked them where they're going, and they said, well, they're taking the guys to the aid station. Well, and then they kept going in the dark, and I couldn't stop them. So I went over to see what they'd left, and right below me, I could hear these Japanese Imperial forces coming up the sides, grabbing the bushes, hanging on, trying to get their equipment up. And so I stumbled over a BAR, which is a nice, heavy rifle. I don't know if you know what it is or not, but it shoots like a machine gun. It's a big, heavy weapon. And it was loaded with a clip in it, and these people had abandoned it. So I picked that up. That was one of the best things I could find. And I walked up along this brink where I could look down into the darkness there, and I started firing back and forth. And I could hear I was causing a lot of problems. And when that thing ran dry, I went back to see if I could find any more clips. There were none, maybe in the bottom of the hole for all I knew. So I had a bunch of Mills bombs, an Australian big hand grenade. I brought four with me, or two, or something like that, and I picked up a half a dozen more that these guys had abandoned. And I started lobbing them at these Japanese. And pretty quick, the guy who was doing all the shouting and giving orders, I didn't hear him anymore, so I figured, well, I got that character. And then two of them managed to get up a ways, and I managed to get them to turn around and go back down. And then it got quiet, and I realized that I had done what I decided to do, stopped them. Now, if they'd have come up into our perimeter with that many people, there's about probably half as many as we had, and once you get in the middle, you've got it made. Everybody outside is in trouble. They would have taken our position and this very valuable thing that we needed to end this conflict, which we eventually did with it. And anyhow, I managed to accomplish what I was out to do. I stopped them, I drove them back, and then there was a little ravine there that I slid down into at one point when I was ducking one of their grenades. And I could always see their grenades. They come like a little sparkler coming through the air. And so I got up back out of that thing, and I was a little bit frustrated then. I didn't have any more weapons left. I did have a Tommy gun, and I'd fired two clips out of it into these guys, too, as well as the BAR. And so I was a little frustrated. I had nothing else to fight with, so I pulled off my helmet and gave it a big swing down this ravine in case anybody else came, and I figured I might hit them. And it just went all, I heard it go hitting down to the bottom, and there was nobody there. Then I realized I was lucky as a devil. I'd gotten them all, got them out. And so we managed to hold that position until we got enough other forces around, and then they started bringing us in little air support, and finally drove the Japanese out of the, and also had another airborne outfit jump into Markham Valley along to the left flank, and the Aussies came down out of Wow. And so we had quite a big force there, and we drove the Japanese off of that peninsula. Most, what was left of them, I think, got away from, in the naval base in a supply submarine. There couldn't have been very many left. So that's the way it went. And I was always very tickled that I managed to do that and yet pursue our activities up there, I guess, at Naval Base. That's about it. Any questions, I'd love to answer.
Great. Well, that's certainly a great story. And do you have family members here that you'd like to introduce?
My wife, Joanna, back there.
We're very glad that you could be here, too. And certainly thank you, Representative Widener, for bringing this before us. And
Madam Chair, if I may, the ravine that Leonard was talking about that he slid into, when he slid down into that ravine, he left out one little detail. There were two Japanese in the ravine that he landed on, and he took his bayonet and had stabbed one, and he ran off and didn't have anything left and used his helmet to hit the other one, and he ran off after that, and then he slung it down. So if you do a search for helmet hero, it'll come up with Leonard DeWitt and some old newspaper articles. So. As well. But as you can see, I mean, just from the brief story, there's a lot of things that, you know, he'll leave out because he's a very humble man and the kind of guy that we really should be honoring and looking up to. And I think is what happened. He was part of the reserves at that time, and General MacArthur did not want to issue a Congressional Medal of Honor to a reservist. It was for full-time military only, was his thought on it. But the 141st did a lot of great things and has not received a Congressional Medal of Honor, I think, since the Spanish War, which is a very long time. And I think we need to recognize our even part-time military guys when they're going into battle. They're very much deserving of the same awards as full-time military. So that's why we're here today.
Well, thank you again for your incredible bravery and sharing your story with us today. My dad is a World War II 8th Air Force veteran who's still around at the age of 90, so I know that we have wonderful people with great stories to tell. His unit gets together every summer. I don't know if you have reunions of your division, but
yes.
Are there any other members here in Oregon that you're in touch with?
World War II.
Anyone else from the Sunset Division or other infantry members?
The regiment I was with, you know, the division had four regiments originally. One regiment each from Oregon, Washington, Montana, and Idaho. That was 41st Division. Then they peeled off one regiment, 161, to go down and reinforce it, to make up another. Then they went to the tri-square, as they called it. It used to be four-square division. It was all to do with the tactics you used with the unit. And then they went down to the three, so we lost one regiment. But the 162, the regiment I was with, which is an Oregon regiment, is still active now. The 41st Infantry Division no longer exists, except in history and places like Overton Museum. It's the 41st Brigade now. Brigade is two regiments. See, we're losing regiments. We're down to two now. Mm. And the 162 and 186, I believe it is, form the Oregon National Guard Army Brigade, Infantry Brigade. Now, they will deploy to Afghanistan in late 2014 to close out Afghanistan. They can't send better people, I don't think. Your citizen soldier, which I happen to be one of them, I'm prejudiced, but I think they do many things much better than an active military unit, which wouldn't consider many personal things in it. So I think the 41st Brigade is a heck of a good outfit to send to Afghanistan to close it out, but it's not going to be funny. There are going to be other guys there like me or maybe come home in some other condition. But that's our National Guard. That's their duties. And that's what we've done. We were called up originally in 1940, 41, to serve with the military. with the active army because we were the best trained, best available the military had. We were sent first to the Pacific because we were the best available. And we first went into combat in the Pacific. The 41st, which is a National Guard division, and the 32nd, which is another National Guard division, were the first to fight with the Japanese Imperial Forces. Now these guys had, the Japanese Imperial Forces had won every battle against every country in the Pacific up to that point. See, they were undefeated. They thought it was ridiculous. We used to listen to this woman called Tokyo Rose, who used to broadcast on the radio to it, tell us about all those Boy Scouts, you know, they're going to get mauled by the Japanese Imperial Forces. Oh, they're going to teach us how to really fight a war, things like that. Couldn't believe her much. For 5 years, they'd been fighting. They had totally experienced troop, well-equipped. When we went into combat, we were committed with the rifles we had on our backs and the machine guns we carried. We had no Air Force to support us. Our naval force was three PT boats that had helped MacArthur escape from the Philippines. That was in our naval forces. They followed us and fought with us all the way up through New Guinea. And if you want to hear good war stories, you ought to hear about those three little PT boats and what they did. Mm-hmm. But it was a fight against superior odds, against superior people with superior equipment, better trained, you might say. It's hard to beat battle training. And we managed to put a stop to them, drive them back 200 miles, and then take a big establishment away from them that they did not want to lose. They lost that. They lost the one at Ley, too, which is also a huge one. So they fought like the devil to keep it, but it didn't do them any good. They were up against the National Guard.
Great. Well, thank you again for your service and for sharing that story. And I did want to ask you, Representative Widener, because there are several Senate sponsors, had you talked to anybody in particular about carrying this on the floor?
I think probably Senator Boquist, since he would be his senator for Mr. DeWitt, and give me a chance to go
that would
and
be
sit
great.
Down and take our information to him. So.
Yeah, and I'm sure Senator Boquist, who's the chair of our Veterans Affairs Committee, would be honored to carry it on the floor. Any other questions or comments, members? Yes, Senator Beyer.
Colonel DeWitt, it's thank you very much for your service to the country. You obviously had a very decorated career and fought well. And my father also was a World War II vet and is still living. So I appreciate that. It's our honor this morning to pass this resolution, and hopefully it'll find responsive ears in Washington. They'll do the right thing this time.
Actually, Chair Rosenbaum, members, the first time, because we dropped this kind of late and it ended up in rules, and it was the day that they were going over poker rooms and everything, so the rules committee was packed with people, and it's the first time I've ever seen a complete standing ovation after we'd finished and walked out of there. It was incredible. But well, we were in the downstairs room, and you can imagine just because they had all the people coming in, poker's pretty popular. But they were all there and got to hear his story right off the bat. So
that's
it was,
great. Yes, Senator Burdick.
Well, you know, honoring a reservist is especially near and dear to my heart because my grandfather served in both World War One and World War Two, and he was actually the first. And after he served full time during those wars, and then he became a reserve officer in the 104th Timberwolves, and he became the first, or at least I'm told, he became the first reservist to achieve the rank of Major General. Hmm. So his name was Lamar Tews.
Great. Okay, well, thank you again for being here, and we'll look forward to perhaps seeing you back the day that we take this up on the floor of the Senate.
Thank you for having me.
And members, we are in a work session. Senator Starr.
Madam Chair, I move HGM 17 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Starr has moved HGM 17 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we'll ask Senator Boquist to carry this on the floor. And I'll close the work session on HJM 17. It looks like now we have two legislators on two different matters before us. So I'm not sure which of you is more pressed for time. Are you supposed to be in a Ways and Means hearing, Representative Kump?
No, we don't have a meeting this morning.
Okay.
So
and
I'm fine.
Senator Hansel, are you okay? Okay. Why don't we then, we'll go with Representative Kump. I would say ladies first, but I'm not going to say that given the topic. So I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 27. And Lori, could you tell us about this?
I'd be happy to. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 27 honors the 2012 Oregon Women of Achievement for outstanding leadership and service to the people of Oregon. It specifically names the achievements of Robin Morris Collin, Jane O'Keefe, Gina Warren, and Serena Stoudemire Wesley. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and it moved off the House floor with a 59-aye, one excused vote.
Good morning, Representative Kump. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Good morning, Senator Chair Rosenbaum and members. For the record, my name is Betty Kump. I serve House District 22, Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and North Salem. I've been honored to be part of the Oregon Women's Commission now, what, I think 4 years already. Time flies when you're having fun. And it is my honor to bring this resolution forward about four very inspirational women, and one works just across the street and yet has obtained national honors for her work on sustainability and the environment. Jane O'Keefe is, and that was Robin Morris Collin, and Jane O'Keefe is a community leader in Lake County. We didn't have to look hard. It's hard to narrow down the opportunities to honor people. And she's been on their watershed board, the Association of Counties. Gina Warren is Vice President of Global Diversity at Nike, Levi Strauss, AT&T. These women have been incredible. And then our last person, our honoree, is Serena Stoudemire Wesley. And she has been deeply engaged in the CCOs in developing the health organization units in the state. And I just ask for your support to continue closing the loop on honoring them and have this legislation pass into law to honor these four wonderful women.
Great. Well, thank you, Representative Kump, for bringing this to us. As a former member and chair of the Commission for Women, I'm always really impressed at the winners of the Women of Achievement Award, and you're absolutely right. There's just so many great women who've accomplished so much out there that it's really hard, I know, to choose from among the nominees. So.
Yes, it is. And of course, you're always biased with the awardees for the year, but this truly is an incredible group of women. Their contributions are felt throughout the state, literally.
Great. Any questions for Representative Kump? Okay. Well, thank you. And members, we are in a work session.
Chair, I move HCR 27 to the floor with the adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Starr has moved House Concurrent Resolution 27 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And I believe that Senator Mona Sanderson is currently the Senate member of the
Yes.
Commission for Women, so we'll ask her to carry this on the floor, and I'll close the work session. And Senator Hansel, if you'd like to come forward, and I think next we'll open a public hearing and work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 18. And Lori, could you tell us about this?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Concurrent Resolution 18 recognizes the 50th anniversary of the Aurora Colony Historical Society. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on the measure. It's good to go.
Great. Thank you, Lori. And thank you, Senator Hansel, for waiting so patiently.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bill Hansel, Senator from District 29. First of all, it was so moving to hear. I wish I'd been here earlier to hear all of the previous testimony with that veteran now. I was thinking my grandfather was in the National Guard in Washington, so he was probably a part of a lot of the same activity as it was being related. But sure hope that justice is done and that's taken care of. You may ask or be thinking, why in the world would a senator from Athena, Oregon, out in eastern Oregon, be the lead sponsor of the concurrent resolution with the Aurora Colony? And the reason is that the bootmaker for the Aurora Colony, George Krause, is my wife's great-grandfather. Mm-hmm. And so we've had a lot of connections. The Krause House and Museum is a part of their family. So a lot of history goes back. And this past Mother's Day weekend, we were in Aurora for a big activity there when they walking with Emma, Jane Kilpatrick was the author, and it was just a great weekend. And when they found out that I was related and a senator, I was asked, well, is there a possibility that since we're celebrating our 50th anniversary that maybe there would be a resolution or something that could be done? Being a freshman, I wasn't sure how to do it, but I said I would try and see what I could do, and talked to the president's office, and you have before you the result of that. Since it wasn't part of my district per se, I went to the Senator Girard, in whose district Aurora falls, as well as Representative Gillum, and asked if they'd like to co-sponsor it, and they were more than happy to do it. So basically, it's 50 years that the folks there in Aurora have organized to remember the heritage and the background of this religious colony. It was a Christian communal society founded in 1856 by under the direction of Wilhelm Kyle, and a part of Oregon history, and it's my honor to bring that before you for consideration.
Great. Well, thank you. That's a great story. And I've spent a little time in Aurora. It really is a fascinating community still to this day. And I think there probably are a lot of families that have been there for generations. I know I've run into one or two people that have, that's just where they live because their family has always lived there.
Right.
So any questions or comments for Senator Hansel? And Senator Hansel, do you think you want to co-carry this with Senator Girard?
I'll sure offer that to him if he'd like to do that. I talked to him previously. He said, no, go ahead and do it. But as it gets closer, I'll see. But I'm happy to, whatever he would like to do.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you again for bringing this to us. And we are in a work session.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate Concurrent Resolution 18 be reported to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Starr has moved SCR 18 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we'll ask Senator Hansel to carry this on the floor. And if Senator Girard wants to make comments, I'm sure we'd love to hear those too. Thanks again. And I'll close the work session on SCR 18. And I think now we're just awaiting Senator Devlin, right? So are we expecting him?
Yeah.
Okay. Members, I think we'll, I suppose maybe he'll get here if we go ahead and open the hearing. So, and he's going to be testifying on all three of these? Okay. So we could open them simultaneously. So I will open a public hearing and work session on HCR 18, HCR 19, and HCR 20. And Lori, would you like to tell us about each of these?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Concurrent Resolution 18 commemorates the 100th anniversary of the founding of the city of West Lynn. There is no revenue or fiscal impact. It moved off the House floor with 58 aye votes and two excused. House Concurrent Resolution 19 commemorates the 100th anniversary of the founding of the city of Tualatin. There again is no fiscal or revenue impact, and that moved off the House floor with 59 aye votes and one excused. And then House Concurrent Resolution 20 honors Alice Richmond for her contributions to the community. There's no revenue or fiscal impact. And again, that measure moved off the House floor with a 59 aye vote, one excused.
And thank you, Lori, for that explanation. And Senator Devlin, with your impeccable sense of timing, you arrived just as we had opened our hearings on all three of these resolutions. So if you'd like to come forward on HCR 18, HCR 19, and HCR 20, and welcome back to the Senate Rules Committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. Madam Chair, my understanding is you have opened a hearing on all three.
Yes, we are like a three-ring circus here, Senator Devlin.
Well, Madam Chair, if the committee can indulge me, I will give you just short presentations on all three. My state representative, Representative Julie Parrish, actually prepared all three of these and actually guided them through the House. And at the time they went through the House, parties came from the district actually to testify. And I just promised to actually do my best to get these three through the Senate. And I think they're very important resolutions for the parties involved. So I'll start off with HCR 18. This is a resolution in honor of the city of West Lynn. West Lynn will be celebrating its centennial on August 15th, 2013. 100 years ago this August, the West Side Improvement Club voted 50-7 in favor of incorporating the neighborhoods of West Oregon City, Bolton, Sunset, Willamette, into the present city of West Lynn. In the years since West Lynn's incorporation, the city has grown to more than 25,000 residents. Obviously, it's a city known for its scenic beauty. And as the state senator from that area, I can tell you that when I used to represent as a representative Lake Oswego in the north, and I still do, that I consider Lake Oswego one of the hardest areas to walk door to door. I did not realize how difficult West Lynn would be because it the hills of Lake Oswego pale in significance to the hills in West Lynn. It's a home of many attractions that people know of today. There's a Tri-County Farmers Market. You will see some proposals in this legislative session about Willamette Falls. It actually also has the Cascadia Meteorite Laboratory. It has a lot of community celebrations, a casino night and auction, an annual street dance, and I don't know where they got this name from, Woofstock.
We can imagine.
A little derivative of an Oktoberfest and an old-time fair. It is truly my pleasure to serve with Representative Parrish in representing this area, and it's my pleasure to bring this resolution to you today. The next resolution, a little bit more colorful when I talk about the history, is the city of Tualatin is also celebrating its centennial anniversary. This is the colorful part. In 1913, a spirited debate unfolded between the Anti-Saloon League and the incorporation enthusiast as to whether the town should be incorporated. The Anti-Saloon League feared incorporation would cause increased liquor sales and the rise in the number of degenerates within the area. Despite their arguments, the incorporation enthusiasts won out, and on August 18, 1913, the city of Tualatin was incorporated. This is actually where I live within the district. I have lived in Tualatin now, I believe, going on 34 years. I actually started in terms of public service in Tualatin in terms at the local level as a member of their Parks Advisory Board and later as a member of their the Tualatin City Council. It's actually a very beautiful city with a very rich agricultural history. Actually, I hate to say it this way, but the subdivision that I live in is actually the portion of a former century farm. Mm. And I'll just comment on that briefly. I have wonderful soil about 3 feet below where my lawn is and everything else, because when they built the subdivision, they brought in a lot of fill, which contained rocks and very poor soil. But if I dig down 3 feet, I have unbelievably good soil. It's also the home of some interesting developments, as you're obviously aware of Tualatin Commons, but you may be more aware of Bridgeport, one of the largest shopping areas actually in the metropolitan area. I'm very proud also of the schools there. The Future Business Leaders of America team won 45 awards and 8 state championships this last year. The robotics team won the Best Design Award at the state game competition, and let me say this, the Uki Award at the Willamette Programming Competition. I urge your support for this resolution. Now I come to HCR 20, which is kind of special because we often do resolutions in memory of someone, and this is not in memory of someone. This lady is actually in her 80s, and I'm coming here to talk to about Alice Richmond. Her life story kind of epitomizes a common American narrative. She was born in Lyons, France in 1930. Lived in France, obviously, throughout World War II. Obviously has many stories to tell of that time. She moved to the United States in 1949 and married a World War II veteran, and actually worked for many years as a designer, I believe, for Pendleton Woolen Mills. She is almost like a fixture within the community in West Lynn. She is literally at every event. She helps organize every event. She's a vocal advocate for the community. In her 55 years in the community, she has been probably more active than any other singular person. She regularly attends school board meetings, city council meetings, county commission meetings, and she is hard to get away from. She is actually one of those people that will not let you walk away without answering a question. She also personally organizes West Lynn's annual 4th of July celebration. This is a lady of relatively modest means, and somehow she manages to organize this every year, and she has professional entertainment that she gets people to pay for. She has professionally operated fireworks. Normally, I think at least a couple of thousand people attend this event in the Willamette every year. The community, Representative Parrish, and I thought that she should be honored, and kind of in a unique way honored, not as a memorial, but while she's still with us. So these are the three resolutions, and Madam Chair, member of the committee, I ask for your support.
Thank you very much, Senator Devlin. That was quite a tour de force to talk about all three of those at once, and I didn't find the Woofstuck reference in any of these resolutions, but I can tell you that I once bought a dog birthday cake at a doggy bakery in West Lynn, so I can sort of see where the Woofstuck festival might have come from. Okay, any questions or comments for the good senator? Yes, yeah, Senator sure. Burdick.
I especially appreciated your story about Tualatin. In our previous memorial, I talked about my grandfather, Lamar Tews, who was a World War II veteran and the first major general, the first service reservist to become a major general in the country. But one of his relatives was Ruth Tews, who was president of the Women's Christian Temperance Union. So I felt a connection with Tualatin's anti-saloon league connection.
Yeah.
And Senator Devlin, did you want to carry all three of these on the floor?
I guess I will, yes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
I was hoping, Madam Chair, that you'd kind of submit them in a staggered fashion. Because the gentleman who often presides, I think Senator Burdick, when she presides, would be fine. But the gentleman that often presides might get a little irritated with me speaking three times in a row.
Well, we'll see if we can work that out now that that's on the record, Senator Jones. Okay, great. Well, thank you again for being here. We'll let you get back to your busy day.
Thank you very much.
Okay, members, we are in work session.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 18 to the floor with it be adopted recommendation.
Thanks. Senator Starr has moved House Concurrent Resolution 18 to the floor with it be adopted recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we'll ask Senator Devlin to carry this on the floor.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 19 to the floor with it be adopted recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Concurrent Resolution 19 to the floor with it be adopted recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, motion carries. And we'll ask Senator Devlin to carry this one as well. Senator Starr.
I move HCR 20 to the floor with it be adopted recommendation.
Thanks. Senator Starr has moved House Concurrent Resolution 20 to the floor with it be adopted recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, motion carries. We'll ask Senator Devlin to carry that one as well. And I'll close the work sessions on HCR 18, HCR 19, and HCR 20. And members, we do have another hearing tomorrow morning at 8:30. I won't say it won't be quite as much fun, because I'm sure it will be lots of fun, but it will also have several policy bills to take up tomorrow morning. So if you could possibly look at your materials on OLIS ahead of time and be here as close to 8:30 as possible, that'll enable us to hopefully get through quite a few bills. So,
Madam Chair, why are you looking at me when you say that?
It was only that that's where my head swiveled. It meant nothing. Okay, thank you very much, members, for being here this morning. And with nothing further to come before us today, we are adjourned.